file notice. The terrorists were undressed. Two of them were injured, one in the foot, the other in the hand. They were lying on a stretcher and had already received medical attention. The third was unharmed and was lying on his stomach on the ground. His hands were tied behind his back. They were addressed in German and English, but without success. Under the given circumstances, the three guerrillas had to be taken to a prison.
In quick succession, the three were then taken to the prisons, one at a time in separate vehicles, each guarded by three escort officers. Then the three start talking and leave very interesting traces in the few weeks of their detention. And they behave in a way as if they know that the German state would never put them on trial, which the Germans actually never did, not even after 50 years. Obviously, there should never be a trial.
Geheimakte 1972, das Olympia-Attentat in München.
Hallo Tunis, wir haben die israelische Mannschaft in unserer Gewalt.
My brother came to do sport in the Olympics and they were murdered there.
Die ganze Geschichte, investigativ recherchiert. Bisher unveröffentlichtes Material.
I was contacted by a German journalist, Christoph Lemmer.
Geheimakte 1972, die ganze Geschichte.
Hochwey September mehr lei, achadassar, kulam zahar.
Episode 10. Bentoumi.
Amar Bentoumi, one of the most prominent lawyers in the Arab world since the 1960s until recently. Bentoumi is one of the lawyers representing Iraqi prisoners of war after the Iraqi war. Bentoumi was Algerian. He was born in 1923. He is one of the pioneers of Algerian independence from France. He organized strikes and was imprisoned several times. He later becomes Algerian Minister of Justice. And shortly after the Palestinian terrorists attacked the Israeli Olympic team, Bentoumi suddenly appeared in Munich. Just a few days after the bloody shooting at the Fürstenfeldbruck airfield, where the attack ends, all Israeli hostages die, as well as 5 of the 8 attackers. That means 3 survive. These 3 are being held in custody in 3 Bavarian jails when Amar Bentoumi travels to Munich.
Telex from the Federal Internal Secret Service, classified as secret. A friendly service reports the following facts. Amar Bentoumi has been a member of the Bar Association since 1947. In 1956, he took over the defense of the accused involved in the firebombing of Radio Algiers. He is a devoted supporter of communist ideology.
In 1972, Bentoumi becomes head of the Algerian Bar Association.
In that role, he participated as an observer against the 3 Palestinians and the Israeli security officer who were involved in the attack against an El Al Boeing 777 aircraft in Munich. He was appointed head of the Collective of Defenders for Palestinians. Bentoumi has been instructed to go immediately to the Federal Republic of Germany to support the defense of the imprisoned Palestinians in the case of the attack on the Olympic Village in Munich.
So support the 3 terrorists who were the only ones who survived the attack and who are suddenly seen as heroes by the radical Palestinian groups and their supporters in the Arab world and in Germany.
Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, September 12, 1972. In Frankfurt, the German Palestinian Society calls the murder of the Israeli Olympic team members as a resolute and brave action by the Palestinian revolutionaries. Leaflets posted on the campus of Frankfurt University state that the Munich action was an act of war in the Palestinian people's struggle for liberation, dictated by political and military necessity.
Another example that shows how great the reverence for the terrorists is. The handling of the bodies of the five other terrorists who died in Fürstenfeldbruck.
A plane from Libya has arrived in Munich, which is supposed to bring the dead terrorists home. The departure is scheduled from September 11th at 1:30 p.m. The place of departure, Munich Riem or Fürstenfeldbruck, is still being kept secret.
This is written in an internal telex sent amongst the German authorities. Kept as a secret is as well what happened to the terrorists' dead bodies after the coroner's inquest. The chief coroner asked the police to get out the bodies of the coroner's facilities as fast as possible. They should be buried in a cemetery. And so it came the same day.
It was promised that no one would find out about it and that no information would be given about the place and time of the burial.
Those responsible are probably aware that this cemetery would not be their final resting place. Because the five dead terrorists were buried in loaned coffins and then dug up again just a few days later for the flight. Not from Fürstenfeldbruck as initially planned. It may have occurred to one of those responsible that this would make a tasteless symbol. Another Air Force base near Munich is selected, also top secret, of course.
The bodies of the five Arab terrorists who died on September 5th and 6th, 1972, at the Fürstenfeldbruck military airfield were flown to Tripoli on September 11th, 1972, at 4:04 p.m. from the Neubiberg military airfield in a DC-4 operated by the Libyan airline LAFCO.
Neubiberg was selected for security reasons. The Libyan plane is sent to remote parking position there. The crew, pilot and co-pilot U.S. citizens and Libyan service, and a flight engineer from the Emirates have to exit the plane and are frisked. German officers also search the plane. Only then are the coffins with the five dead terrorists loaded and it goes back to Tripoli. There, Ruler Gaddafi staged a pompous hero's funeral spectacle. The three surviving terrorists are also glorified as heroes. There is special treatment for them in custody. A prominent defender flies in. They are celebrated in the Arab world. Arab fellow prisoners support them. They manage to communicate with the outside world, but one after another. Interrogation of the terrorist Badran, Munich, Stadelheim, September 15th, 1972.
According to reports from Libya and Tunisia, you and your comrades are being severely tortured, beaten and put under psychological pressure. Is that correct?
At the moment I'm doing well and I'm not being tortured or put under any mental pressure. I have never been wronged by you.
Badran writes a kind of diary in prison. It can be found in a file at the Munich police headquarters, blocked and kept confidential until the year 2042. Also one of these files, which I can only look at after much persuasion, whereby copies or scans are forbidden. But notes are allowed. So I simply retyped this document completely. The first words are,
"In the name of Allah, the merciful and benevolent."
The first entry is a letter to his father.
"To beloved Father Harash Mohamed Zakik, greetings and salute. From the cursed prison cell, I am writing to you full of longing to see you and to see my brothers again. Allah be praised. My foot is almost back to normal. I don't know anything about my brothers in the other prisons. Oh, How hard is prison? I cannot describe to you how I suffer. But we have to take it upon ourselves for Palestine. I am sending this letter with one of the Arab brothers from Libya, who will be released from prison tomorrow. Allah have mercy on the heroic martyrs.
Badran writes his diary in Arabic. The translator not only translates it into German, he also summarizes passages in his own words. The English translation here is done within our editorial team at Antenne Bayern.
At the beginning, he describes the first impressions after the arrest. He himself is handcuffed. He has pain in his leg where he was hit by bullets. He was terrified when the policeman gestured to him to understand that his foot had to be amputated. However, that turned out to be a mistake.
Because of his foot, he is in the prison hospital for the first few days. A lot of time, a lot of boredom, a lot of writing.
He describes his life as a prisoner with a daily monotony initially in an epic way. Cigarettes always play a significant role, just something to smoke. During his stay in the hospital, however, this was strictly forbidden. Well, ways and means were found. At first he only spoke English and pretended that he didn't understand Arabic when an Arab was called in as an interpreter.
Then the police interrogations begin. At the first, the officials ask about his occupation. He replies, Fedayeen, meaning Arab underground fighter, as profession. Apparently, he has no ID.
Where did you grow up? What schools did you attend? And how many siblings do you have?
I don't want to say anything about this.
He's stubborn. The only thing he utters are Palestinian propaganda slogans.
America, England, the Federal Republic of Germany have gotten to the point where Israelis are now owning our country.
The next day, the officers issue the arrest warrant to him for multiple murders. They try again to engage him in conversation.
Were you aware that your actions would seriously disrupt the course of the Olympic Games?
What are the Olympic Games compared to the cause of the Palestinians?
A few days later, the atmosphere changes. Badran starts chatting, talks about family, siblings, fantasizes and invents a lot, contradicts himself, corrects himself, writes long-winded diary entries again, which the translator summarizes like this.
The prisoner develops a taste for the police interrogations because each time he would get some cigarettes. On page 4 of his notes, he reproduces parts of the interrogation. Question: How did you come to Munich? Answer: From an Arab country by plane to Rome, from there by plane to Paris, and from there by train to Munich. Question: How much money did you have with you? Answer: About 3,000 German marks. He gave his citizenship as Palestinian. With pleasure, he smoked the cigarette offered to him, brand Milde Sorte.
Milde Sorte was a common cigarette brand amongst elder people of the lower middle class in Germany at that time. He hears church bells ringing in his prison cell. The tinkling disturbs him as he notes in several entries. And again he writes sentences like this.
I keep thinking about the brothers and relatives, but my friends pull me out.
Until then, monotonous prison life.
He keeps describing the prison routine. Breakfast, lunch, supper. If there was anything to smoke, cigarettes too. He was touched by the care he was given by the fellow Arab prisoners and especially the Palestinians. They asked what he wanted and provided him smoking articles, cigarette paper and matches, contrary to what the prison regulations prohibit.
There is no doubt. Badran the terrorist is not a normal prisoner in Stadelheim.
File notice. Munich, September 28th, 1972. Subject. Hostage murders in Munich and Fürstenfeldbruck. Here, the president of the Algerian Bar Association visits the arrested terrorists at the prisons.
Bentoumi has arrived, flown in from Algeria, especially for Badran and his two accomplices. No expense seems too high to support the three. The prosecutor's office expressively approved Bentoumi's visit according to the police memorandum.
On September 28, 1972, the visit to the Munich Stadelheim prison took place. In the infirmary there, Badran was introduced to the gentlemen.
Badran noted in his diary who these gentlemen were. The translator writes,
"The jailer asks him to get dressed. He is led into a room in which six people are seated. The lawyer Amir Bentoumi, a representative of the Algerian embassy, and the interpreter Salat Parka, as well as a judge from Munich, high prison officials, and a high personality whose name he does not remember. And again, he gets some cigarettes. Brand Marlboro."
The police report of this meeting in Stadelheim reads as follows.
Badran showed no modesty and expressed a great deal of wishes. He was even instructed by Mr. Bentoumi, and that such wishes could not completely be fulfilled for this reason. During his remarks, Badran also indicated that he would fight the Israelis to the death. Mr. First Public Prosecutor Amon then asked whether he would also be active in this direction in Germany after his release. The terrorist's answer was very clear. He declared that he will continue the fight against the Israelis with all consistency.
Badran continues to diligently write diary. Sentences like this.
"Dear brother, do you know that everyone around you is a pig? They eat human flesh. These people know nothing about the Orient.
All this.
His word of honor is that if you fuck his sister, you have to fuck him too.
All this.
German law is like my dick. When I'm horny, I play with him till I ejaculate. That's German law."
October 14th, 1972. Almost 6 weeks have passed since the attack on the Israeli Olympic team. Badran tries a new hobby. He now calls himself a correspondent in Munich prison and writes an article that he sends to the pro-partisan newspaper Al-Muharrer.
"I am writing to you who understand my language, behind the bars of my dungeon, from the narrow cell with four walls."
He writes nothing about friendly interrogations, cigarettes, and the visit of the prominent Algerian star lawyer. For this.
"If you want to buy something here in prison, you have to submit a written application. And then it might take 2 months for what you want to come along."
What he has no way of knowing, because he won't be in prison for 2 months. And as if he suspected or already knew that, he continues to write.
"Well, we know that tomorrow or the day after, Black September will get us out here. We will wait for the Black September. So when it comes, we can return and set the world on fire. Your brother in captivity. Signed, Irapim Badran."
Badran and his two accomplices in Kaisam and Strobing apparently actually have connections to the outside world. A Jordanian detainee awaiting deportation, already on his way to Yugoslavia, is caught during a search with apparently two secret messages for Badran. The notes are hidden in a tobacco packet. The first message says this.
"Dear Abraham, in a few days we want to leave Germany. If you need anything, let us know and please, we are ready to fulfill your wish. If God wills, inshallah. We also received your letter and are glad that you are doing well. Khalid Mohammed."
The second message is even more revealing. It suggests that there are even helpers amongst the prison guards.
"Don't worry about the cop who gave you the cigarettes. He's a great person and our best friend. Next, you will get the stamps and the cigarettes. Whenever you pick up your food at 3 p.m., you have to be careful. Every letter you receive from us must be burned or thrown into the toilet."
And while Badran is still in custody, the immigration office of the city of Munich issues an expulsion order against him. The corresponding form on green paper was ready to be filled out when, on the morning of October 29th, a Sunday, a Lufthansa airliner was hijacked shortly after takeoff from Beirut in Lebanon. The kidnappers demand that the three terrorists be released. And not only that, they plan to pick them up themselves with their hijacked plane. October 29th, 1972 was the day on which the last chapter of the Olympic massacre took place. The day the Palestinians violently liberate their three Olympic assassins. The day for which Germany was apparently already prepared in advance, because the deportation orders from the Munich Immigration Office, dated October 29th, i.e. dated a Sunday, are already in the drawer. What happened there is a story in itself, which we will tell in the next and final episode of Secret Files 1972. Outbreak. You like this podcast? Consider writing a review, sharing it with your friends, or clicking like or full 5 stars. You feel you have something to contribute? Contact me via email to geheimakte@antenne.de.
Geheimakte 1972. 50 Jahre nach dem Olympia-Attentat in München. Ein Podcast der Antenne Bayern Group.